You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And welcome back. And next week, a very deserved and extraordinary honor will fall the way of one Sylvester Croom, who, of course, made his mark as an All-American at the University of Alabama before he joined his coach in the coaching world and later became the head football coach at Mississippi State, making news across the country. Next week, we'll go into the College Football Hall of Fame. I know there are a lot of things that we want to talk to Sylvester Croom about. But first of all, Coach, it's a great honor to have you. It's always a pleasure, and congratulations to you and your family.
Paul, thank you very much. And I'm excited and looking forward to all the ceremony next week and being around the other inductees as well.
I know you well enough to know that you don't like talking about yourself and the fact that this is one of the truly remarkable honors that any person in your business can achieve. But when you got the news, take us through your mindset and what it meant to you.
First of all, I was honored several months ahead of the announcement. Greg Byrne did call me and told me that the university was going to put my name in nomination. I was honored just to be put in nomination. And then it's funny how they announced it to you. I went to the post office to pick up my mail, and I got this package from the Hall of Fame. And I opened the package, and it was a football in there that said you were announcing your induction. So that's how I found out. So it was a shock, and it was a surprise. It was a great surprise. And I'm really, really blessed, Paul, and excited about it, because when I look back over my career, I think 50 years ago this year was the first time I was playing varsity football at Alabama. And I was just a struggling offensive lineman, just hoping to make the travel squad. And now 50 years later, I'm being inducted into the Hall of Fame. I'm really thankful, blessed, and excited about it all.
And I know you've been in many Hall of Fames, but this really is one of those pinnacles that's, first of all, very difficult to get in. I mean, the requirements are very stringent in terms of what you had to accomplish in your field.
Without a doubt. And there are a lot of guys who deserve it that haven't gotten in. And I was told that there's so many guys out of the University of Alabama that it takes 50 years for all of us at Alabama who even worthy to be nominated to even possibly get in. And there's a lot of guys out there going to have to wait. They wore that crimson jersey and probably going to have to wait 50 years just like I did.
No, it really is. And I've been to that ceremony, as I suspect you have, and you look around. I mean, I very, very few things have ever affected me more than walking. I think it's now in Las Vegas, am I correct? Many years,
yes.
It's been in New York, and the head table goes on for five or six rows, and some of the people up there, as you know, Coach, are not only titans in college football, but titans in business and in politics and in every walk of life.
Paul, I'm just this actually will be my first time going, because when I was coaching, I never got a chance to go. But when I just see the names of the guys who are already in there, and a lot of my friends in the coaching profession, guys I've worked with, that still go back to this ceremony every year just to get a chance to be around them and see them there. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be like a old home week for me to see a lot of the guys that I played with, against, and coached with and against. So it'll be a great climax to my coaching career.
Speaking of your coaching, and I want to get to parts of it as well, but I couldn't help but think the other day when we were all talking about Carnell Williams and the job he had done leading Auburn at the end of the season, that you had quite an interaction with him as well as his coach in the NFL.
Paul, I tell you what, it was I had Cadillac for 1 year, his last year at the playing football at the St. Louis Rams, and he was a backup player to Steven Jackson there. And I do not hesitate to say that it was one of the most enjoyable years, even though we didn't win a lot of games. But coaching Cadillac Williams and being around a man like that was a unique experience in my coaching career, because he was a guy who was a great player coming out of college, drafted high, played well at Tampa, had a serious injury, bounced back from that, and got into coaching career. You know, I talked with him early on when he got started and just encouraged him and said he's going to go into coaching, and I encouraged him to do that. And it just made me feel so good to see how he handled a bad situation when he became the interim head coach a few weeks ago. And I was just so proud of him. But then again, I wasn't surprised, because he was that way as a player. The energy you saw on the sideline, he was that way. It was the same way as a player, even when he was in a backup role. His enthusiasm, and just a good human being who has good football smarts and is an outstanding leader.
We're talking to Sylvester Croom, who, of course, goes into the College Football Hall of Fame next week. Coach, I was listening earlier today to Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, at his news conference, and he was asked a question that is something we've talked about many, many times over these many years, and that was about the lack of diversity in college football. We all know that we see it everywhere, but in the SEC, there aren't many. There have not been many, and this is a subject you've been very outspoken about. He answered it as artfully as he could, saying that schools, go through a laborious process. But what are your thoughts on where we are right now in 2022?
Paul, we still got a lot of progress to do. We got a lot of progress to do in a lot of areas. But this is one I just think that, again, it's obvious that to have as many minority players and many of the minority assistant coaches as we have, not to have a not to have more minority head coaches. Quite often when minority coaches are discussed, it's, we offer up a lot of alibis and excuses why they aren't hired. A lack of play calling experience, a lack of a leadership experience. Well, if Jeff Saturday can be a head coach of the Baltimore Colts, the Indianapolis Colts, even Baltimore when I used to play for them.
Yeah, of course.
Surely there are a lot of qualified minority coaches who should get that same opportunity. If guys who are not experienced can get hired as coaches, and why doesn't it happen to minority coaches? I mean, let's take a guy like Cadillac. We saw what he did. He never had play calling experience, and yet he goes in there and grabs the heart, mind, and soul of that football team, and they play far better than they played at any time during the year. They played as good as they could play, and that's all a head coach can do, is get his players to play as good as they can play. And the leadership and the experiences that he has, he connects with those guys. So why not, there's no excuses. And I've gotten to the point now, the alibis and the excuses are out the window. Let's just face the reality. Some people just don't want to hire minority coaches. That's just the bottom line. And it's not going to change until minority parents and minority players start speaking out about it and demanding this change. That's the only way I can see it change.
Coach, when you were heralded breaking the color barrier in the SEC nearly 20 years ago, you handled that moment with such grace and humility, and I think a lot of people thought that was going to be the moment that changed the SEC, but It obviously wasn't, based on what we know and how you were describing the current situation.
Well, Paul, I thought it would be. I thought things would have changed. I really, in 20 years, like you say, it's almost 20 years ago now. I really thought things would have changed, but it's discouraging. But we have to keep fighting to make progress. We have to keep fighting to make sure that people who are qualified, who do the work, who can do the job, get opportunities to do that. And the reason for it, Paul, is not just to advance people of color. I want to see the best people get a chance to do the job. I want to see guys who are former players know that they have the opportunity, because they can make a difference. When they move into these positions, minority coaches are moving into these positions and being a leadership role, what you can do to affect society, what you can do to affect the lives of the players, their kids, the next generation, all kids. It's tremendous. I never realized really just how much impact you can have as a head coach on changing people's lives for the good until I stood up in front of that Mississippi State football team. And it's important, because it will change the lives. It'll give kids who don't have any hope, it'll give them hope for the future. That more than anything else. And in the process, you win football games. You got to do both. But the changing of the lives is most important to me.
Coach Grimm, and again, I think the Auburn situation just happened to fall this week with hiring somebody who had previously been a head coach. He had come back from whatever, a lot of things brought him down. But in the Cadillac situation there, do you think it was his lack of experience, or did they just had they already made up their mind who they were going to hire? I know I'm putting you in an awkward spot there, but I'm curious.
Well, I don't know all the details of the situation, but from the outside looking in, I think they had a list of candidates already in their minds, probably before they even made the decision to pull the trigger on the previous head coach. So they went through the process and they went down their list, and it seems that number two on the list got the job. And so, they, I think they, just my observation, I think they pretty much had their minds made up before Cadillac even, before we ever even stood up at the podium. So, that's the way it goes. But the point that I want to make about a guy like Cadillac is there are a lot of other schools that, in other conferences at different levels. I think South Florida's got a job open there. You would hope that schools like that would broaden their search and give guys a chance to coach who may not have had prior experience, who may not have had a negative track record. Here's a man who... Cadillac Williams is a solid citizen. He's a solid American citizen and a great leader, has been throughout his career and will always be. Hey, give a guy like that a chance, and there's a lot of other guys like him that deserve an opportunity, and I hope they get it.
Sylvester Croom, the former head coach at Mississippi State, All-American at Alabama and a longtime assistant there as well, going into the College Football Hall of Fame next week. Coach, many congratulations. It's always a pleasure to see you or visit with you or have you on here, and we'll all be thinking of you next week as you are honored for an extraordinary career.
Paul, thank you very much.
Sly Croom joining us days before he heads into the College Football Hall of Fame. We thank him for being on. We take a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Really enjoyed the conversation with Sylvester Croom. And Augie is up next. Good afternoon, Augie.
Hey, Paul. Good interview with Sylvester Croom. And, you know, today and yesterday have been about redemption and forgiveness. I've got to say this. Sylvester Croom was responsible for a lot of my childhood trauma. I actually saw him play in Baton Rouge when I was a kid, and he was at Bama. So in this age of forgiveness, I forgive Sylvester for tormenting me as a child.
That's funny.
I'm sure he had a huge role in running over us seemingly every year. But anyway, Paul, your show has been centered on a lot of talk about forgiveness, redemption, but invoking the Bible. A lot of religious talk that has centered around the hiring of Hugh Freeze. Do you think if this was the Big Ten, the fan base would have the same type of religious analogies to a coaching change as in the SEC?
No, I think they'd be more concerned about what type of offense and defense he runs.
So football and the Bible are hand in hand in the Bible Belt, right?
Yes, but part of the conversation about the Bible emanates from Hugh Freeze himself, who has always been one who talks about faith and religion and redemption and grace.
But that, too, is part of the SEC in that our leaders and coaches, a lot of them.
Yes, but I know about his religious beliefs, and he is devout. But I've never heard Nick Saban talk about it.
But I think it's more a matter of football and religion in the South go hand in hand, because my view is that it teaches a lot of the same principles: hard work, perseverance, fighting against adversity. That, you know, I know I've lived in the West Coast for a while. You don't hear that.
No.
I've not lived in Big Ten country, but on the Atlantic coast I have. You don't hear that. But in the South, you hear it all the time. I mean, played high school football in the South. It was huge. And now you have Hugh Freeze.
Well, because, and Augie, it's allowed to be more a part of our culture than it is in other places. And I think that's ideological, political. I mean, some things that happen in the South when it comes to religion would not be tolerated in New York. You understand that.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm from the South, and thank God I am. But, Paul, going to the 12-team expansion, how much do you think it was delayed, and we all thought it was going to happen sooner, but was the delay based on Sankey's coup of pulling in Texas and Oklahoma, was it 100% of the reason why it was delayed, 80%, 50%, or not a factor at all?
It was 100%. It was on track, and in spite of all the lies that have been told by people in college athletics about, I didn't know this, and I just came on board, and it was a done deal until that moment.
So the delay was to fight Sankey and the SEC, as you see it.
Well, yeah, and I think it was also a wake-up call that the Big Ten in particular had to react to that, and I think they needed to get their ducks in a row, and they put and but there was no gain by putting it up. It was spite. Spite's the only way. I remember the ACC commissioner talking about how we need more time to study NIL and the transfer portal. Meanwhile, his league has been shut out of the playoffs two straight years.
And Bowlesby was in on it, too.
Well, Bowlesby was part of the original four who came up with a plan, yes.
So have they now forgiven Sankey?
Well, I've said this 1,000 times, but Greg Sankey was only a quarter of that committee, and he got 100% of the blame.
Exactly. And at this point, it's a – I'm not going to say it's a bit of redemption for Sankey, but is it not
he probably will not get any credit. Not that it matters to him, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, these are mood issues. I just think about the bitterness that occurred in this calendar year on that first Monday second Monday in January, when we were sitting there in 16-degree Indianapolis, when they finally shut it down. It looked like it was never going to happen. And here we are a couple of months later.
Do you think these relationships have been rehabilitated, or they're still under
construction? Yes, I do. I think they have been rehabilitated. And let's not forget, the Big Ten has answered the SEC, and they've answered them pretty effectively.
Yes. No, I think they have, too. Well, Paul, free agency has now officially started. Twitter is full of transfer portal applicants. So LSU's in the market for offensive linemen if anybody wants to come. Thanks, Paul.
I will pass that along. Thank you very, very much. Mike is up next. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, how are you? How are you, Paul?
We are well. Thank you.
Hey, I've got a couple questions about this new playoff plan. Let's take this year, for instance. Did I understand correctly that the top four conference champs get a bye?
Correct.
Okay. Well, let's take this year. What happens if there's total chaos and all five of the conferences, the underdog wins? And then you throw in the group of five, which would probably be Tulane. So that's six. It's automatically in. And that would be KSU and, let's see, Utah would be the only two in the top 12 currently that would make it. So then you go back.
Mike, in the interest of time, I get you. The answer is I don't know. The other teams will simply just be the six highest ranked teams. I mean, but I hate to run. We're up against a break. I appreciate it. It's a great idea to go through the whole chaos, but it's obviously not going to happen. We'll have plenty of time to get ready for it in 2 years, and we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, welcome back. Brett McMurphy rejoins us from the Action Network. It's been a while since we had a chance to talk to Brett on a very busy day in college football. Brett, how are you? Great to have you back.
You too, Paul. Good to talk to you again.
So your quick read on the college football playoff expansion, a lot of fans are still a little bit confused by it. I'm sure we have 2 years to figure it all out, but what's your treetop takeaway?
The Rose Bowl realized that they had to play ball or become obsolete. And I think that I'm not even going to say after the first year of the 12-team playoff. I'm going to say after the first game of the 12-team playoff, we will universally want the quarterfinals to be played on campus sites. And obviously they're not going to make that decision for some time. Bill Hancock talked about it today. Let's wait and see how these play out. But I just think, you know, there's a lot of influential people throughout college football that I've talked to that are already pushing to get the quarterfinals on campus. And I think I would agree with that. Obviously, the bowls have a unique hold on the sport. But we'll have to see. But I think it's great. I don't know if I made many fans with the CFP when 15 minutes after the official announcement, I tweeted, "When are we going to 16?" but I'm fine with 12, Paul. They'll probably do another 12-year deal. So if my math is right, that'll take us through 2038. So by the end of the next contract for the 12-team playoff, we can look forward to the next playoff with the 36-team SEC and the 36-team Big Ten battling it out for college football's national championship.
Yeah, and Brett, beyond what we know today, we know college football is fluid, and you certainly have been at the vanguard of the speculation and the reporting of where conferences are. We know where the Big Ten will expand. We think the SEC will expand in 2 years. What do you think is going to happen once the dust settles today? I mean, when is this next round going to happen, and who does it involve?
I still believe, Paul, that the Big Ten is going to have someone else join USC and UCLA when they come on board in 24. I really do. I know nothing's going on right now. I know initially the Big Ten did not get the money that they hoped to get to bring in Washington and Oregon, but those talks are not going to end. How does the 12-team playoff impact that? We'll have to find out. Obviously, it's more money going to these schools. Maybe they'll take a little bit of a haircut now, knowing they're going to have more money from the playoffs. I've heard the argument that, well, why would Oregon and Washington leave the Pac-12 when they're going to have better access to the playoff in the Pac-12 than in the Big Ten? Well, if that's the case, then why would OU and Texas go to the SEC? You go because you're going to double your media rights value. And so I think, you know, I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow, next week, or even next month. I still think before we get to the date when USC and UCLA join the Big Ten, again, but people I talk to believe that those aren't going to be the only two that will be walking in the headquarters in Chicago on that July 1st date.
So, Brett, if that happens, will there be a reaction elsewhere, or are those two not really going to move the needle enough for the SEC or anyone else to care?
Well, the SEC is the only one that can really do anything about it. And the challenge for the SEC is, you know this, their most attractive expansion candidates are all in the ACC. Well, until somebody in the ACC can figure out how to tunnel under the wall or climb over the wall, they're stuck in the ACC. I don't think the SEC is going to reach out to a non-ACC program because, quite frankly, there's nobody outside that footprint that they would want to bring in. Now, the Big 12, depending on what happens with the Big 10, certainly they could go and pick off some remaining Pac-12 schools, and then we don't know what happens with the Pac-12. So you know, the good news for the SEC is, look, you know, they've won a few national titles in the past few years. They've done okay, I guess. So they don't need to expand. They don't have to expand. But if there are ACC teams available, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, Clemson, if those guys suddenly become available, absolutely the SEC would look at them. And they would also bring value to the SEC. And then at that point, you'd have the Big Ten and the SEC both potentially, you know, with up to 16 members.
Can the ACC really do anything right now other than try to survive?
They're trying to figure that out. But, you know, they've got a deal through, you know, 2034, 2035. What are they going to do? They can go back to ESPN. You know, you've had negotiations with them. You can go back to ESPN and say, hey, you know what? We need more money. Well, okay, we'll talk to you in 2034 when your deal's up. ESPN's just not going to say, you know what, we feel bad for you because the Big Ten got all this money, so here's all this money. That's not going to happen. And also, when you look at it from ESPN's side, ESPN, the deal with the Big 12, they only gave the Big 12 $20 million for their schools. Fox provided the other part of the Big 12's deal. So ESPN, if the ACC, when they come to ESPN, and I'm sure they do on a frequent basis, and say, we need more money, Burke Magnus and everyone else can say, you know what? We pay the SEC number one, and you're the second highest paid conference that we pay. And that's accurate. Paul, I don't know what the ACC can do. Everyone rips the ACC for this deal, but I will say, if they didn't put it in place, I don't know what the ACC would look like right now, because the SEC or the Big Ten would have picked off those schools I mentioned earlier. So it's like the old line from Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf. I swear I'll love you till the end of time, and now I'm praying for the end of time. That's exactly what the ACC schools are doing with this grant of rights deal.
Brett, before you go, I don't want to forget where we are right now on the calendar with the CFP. Just your thoughts on what do you think it could look like if you're looking into your crystal ball on Sunday afternoon.
I'll give you a quick answer, and I want to know what you think, because I haven't seen it. I think all four schools should get in, even if they lose, unless somebody gets blown out. If we didn't, the only reason we have conference championship games is because of money. If there were no conference championship games, this would be the 14 playoff. So why would you put a non-champion in over a team that you've already rated as better than that team? Do you agree, or do you think there's room there for somebody?
Yeah, I mean, I get in. And you need to help me. I guess the thing I'm stuck on is Southern Cal losing, for the sake of argument, to Utah twice. That bugs me about getting in the playoff with that, because Utah by no means is a top level team. They're a good team, but they've been too inconsistent all year.
I agree with that, and I think one thing we get so deep in the weeds on, you know, strength of schedule and all those different things. If USC loses to Utah, they would still have three top 25 wins based on the current top 25. Ohio State would only have two. But, again, we've been doing this for 9 years, Paul. There's one thing. Forget all the analytics and data and all this stuff. There's one thing that's ruled the roost every year, and that is number of losses. And no team with two in the loss column has made it. And that seems very simple, but that would be a huge decision for the committee to make on whether to let a two-loss team in over a one-loss team, both teams which, of course, would not have won their conference.
Brett, it's always great to have you on. We need to do this more often. Thanks so much for your time.
You got to pause. See you down the road. Thank you.
You bet. Brett McMurphy from the Action Network. We'll take a short break, and we're coming back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back, and Bob is up next. Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We are doing great.
Great
Thank
interview
you.
With Coach Kroom. What a great man.
Appreciate
I'm going to take you back in his, I'm going to take you back in history a little bit. Before Saban and in Alabama's worst of times, and I know that you were one of the few, if not the only one, that pushed for Coach Kroom to get the Alabama job.
That is
can
correct.
You please tell us the story about how all that went down and, you know, what happened and why he didn't get the job? Well, he should have got the job.
The only time he was considered, Bob, was in 2000. Let me make sure I get this right. In 2003, when Mike Price was fired in May, it came down to, I'm only pushing my memory now for what, 19 years. It came down between, I believe, Richard Williamson, Sylvester Kroom, and Mike Shula. And I rarely get heavily involved in coaching searches, but because I thought this coaching search needed some guidance after they screwed up on Mike Price.
Right.
I did write, I believe, or state that I thought Sylvester Kroom was the perfect choice. And I also used it as I said, we're about to, Alabama's about to celebrate, I believe it was the 50th anniversary of the stand in the schoolhouse door. And I thought the symbolism was just going to be so rich to bring one of the, you know, not only was Sylvester Kroom an All-American, his father was the team chaplain under Paul Bryant. And naturally, they chose the son of Don Shula.
Don Shula.
Who was an absolute disaster. And I don't know what Sylvester Kroom would have done, and I know a lot of people point it to him at Mississippi State. He got off to a really good start there. He beat Saban, I believe, in 2007. And then it fell apart for him, and he was let go by the new athletic director there, Greg Byrne.
Yeah. Well, with all our personnel and recruits that wanted to come to Alabama, I think he would have been the man, like you said. You know, I guess Don Shula had more pull, and Mike Shula being an ex-quarterback, they felt like, you know, that was the man. I thought at the time they were you know, absolutely wrong. But, you know, I appreciate you telling that story because I always wanted to know, you know, from your view after, you know, you pushing so hard for him to get the job, you know, what the true story was. So,
well, that was my that was my only involvement. I knew Coach Kroom when I first started covering the team when Coach Bryant was there. He was on Coach Bryant's last staff. I believe he was retained by Ray Perkins. I'm pretty sure he was, and got to know him very well. Hey, thank you for the call. I do appreciate that. AJ is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I hope you're doing well.
We are doing
I just
great.
Want to give a shout-out to the greatest athlete of all time, 60th birthday. Everybody knows him as Vincent Edward Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Some people say Bo knows. Happy birthday, Bo.
So Bo is 60. Is that correct? Wow. What's that old line?
60. 60 years out. Yeah, 40 years ago.
And I don't feel so good myself.
Well, 40 years ago, he was over the top. Everybody remembers.
You're right.
Over the top, Bo. Hey, I just want to congratulate you, though, on you have officially surpassed Jimmy Sexton as the most notable figure and influential figure in college football. Congratulations.
I must have missed that announcement. What happened, AJ?
Well, you're able to get coaches hired and fired. And you know what CFP stands for? It stands for Carl Feinbaum Pronto. So the committee, before they can make their decisions, they've got to call you and figure out which way we're going to go with this. And so I commend you on your clout that you have on the sport. You've done an excellent job through the years. You know, you were talking about 19 years ago with Sylvester Kroom. You didn't quite have the clout yet, but now you can get them hired and fired. How do you feel about yourself?
Well, you know what, AJ?
Are they paying you enough?
No, of course not. But I really, I think I, it's kind of you to say, but I don't really believe that is what I do anymore. I think I was more active in that in the past because I was a newspaper columnist. I'm just a what am I, Randy? Just a
carnival.
I'm a carnival barker. Johnny B is up next.
Hey, Paul. I heard the last caller talking about Vincent Bo Jackson from Backadory High School. And back in the day, I was you were at the Post Herald, and I was on the same All-State team with Bo Jackson. I don't know if you had a part in picking that team or whatever, but sure. It certainly was an honor.
Well, thank you.
Bo had a terrible stuttering problem back in the day.
He sure did.
And I had another thing I was going to bring up to you. It has, you know, since Hugh Freeze came from Ole Miss, where I grew up in Russellville, I grew up four blocks from where Chucky Mullins grew up. And he had a brother, Horace, and we used to play together as little kids. And I suffered pretty bad from hitting with my head like he did. Of course, it paralyzed him. But, you know, when you hear him talking about the head-on collisions and the penalties, you know, it's not something we like, but, you know, it paralyzed him and it hurts me every day of my life. But I just saw the guy with the Bo Jackson thing, thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, Chucky Mullins is, you know, obviously the Ole Miss player who was paralyzed, and really one of the most profound stories, I think, in the history of this conference. Well, thank you very, very much for the call. We are 3 hours in. Of course, the big news that we started the program with was overnight the Rose Bowl did fold like a cheap table, and we have a college football playoff set with 12 teams for 2024. Again, we'll be in Atlanta tomorrow. We still have another hour here tonight.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.